Jerome will bring it up the floor. Jerome attacking, goes past Odiase. Kicks right corner. Open three, DeAndre Hunter got it! Splashing it from the right corner to tie it at 68. 12.9 seconds to go. Mooney up the floor, three on the left wing. That is no good. Rebound pulled down by DeAndre Hunter, and they're going to dribble it out from ruin to redemption. The Virginia Cavaliers are the 2019 NCAA National Champions. 85-77, Virginia wins its first men's basketball championship.
Virginia, your national champions, as heard there, Westwood One, Kevin Kugler with the call. Of course, we had Kevin on many times over the years to talk about NCAA tournament bracket. And Virginia does win the national championship in overtime. And Texas Tech had one breakdown defensively. Well, they had a few. Their defense wasn't quite as good last night, but Virginia's offense was fantastic. But they overhelped off the three-point line on that play. Give up the layup. Give up the layup. And I thought they were going to. Just give the layup. You're still up one. Defend the three-point line. And Jerome made a great play out to Hunter, who, give him credit, knocked down the wide-open shot. And, you know, it's interesting because we were talking yesterday about the foul in the Auburn-Virginia game. And I saw someone post on Twitter, just it was, I don't know, it seemed kind of heartless, but yet I get the point. Don't get me wrong, I agree with it, but I was like, well, that's easy for you to say because you don't have a dog in the fight. And that was, you just can't over-contest. Well, okay, but if you contested earlier in a basketball game and did the same three or four times and never was called for a foul, how's that your fault when you did the same thing on the very last play of the game and it was called a foul? And the reason I say this is because this is just me. This is my philosophy. I would rather somebody have contested DeAndre Hunter's three-point shot or maybe even fouled him. And he's got to make three free throws. Whereas he was wide open.
Not to win.
Right, sure.
Exactly.
Right, true. But what I'm saying is if you got a really good three-point shooter, he's just got to make one shot. And he makes that one shot, that's it. Whereas if you foul him, he's got to make three free throws. Mm-hmm. So he could easily miss one of those. Now, odds are he's a really good free throw shooter, 82% Kyle Guy the other day in the win over Auburn. What I'm saying is I would rather have my defense right there and contest the shot. And if we get called for a foul, we get called for a foul, whether it's consistent with the game or not. We get called for a foul, get called for a foul. Now, obviously, I don't want to be running at him and run him over. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a major over-contest by the Auburn player in that game the other day. It wasn't overly. I mean, yeah, he went a little too far, but he even tried to hold up. So it wasn't like a major mistake that he made. And I guarantee you, if you go back and watch that game, there were other times three-point shooters were fouled worse than that, which, once again, not saying that was not a foul in that game. But what I'm trying to say is, last night, you didn't have any kind of contest at all on DeAndre Hunter for a wide-open three. Now, as a coach, would you rather have somebody contesting the shot or leave the guy wide open?
You always want to contest it.
Exactly.
Somehow.
Exactly.
Whether you're over-contesting or not, you have to contest that shot.
Right. So when you tell players don't over-contest, well, there's a fine line between contesting it and not contesting it. And you have to go challenge the shot and get your hand up. And sometimes you put your hand up and you come across their wrist or you come across their elbow or you tap their elbow. Or sometimes you don't do any of that and they still call a foul. And so I just, you know, when I saw that comment yesterday, I was like, yeah, true. It was an over-contest in that situation. As a coach, I would be okay with an over-contest like that where you didn't wipe out the guy. Then leaving DeAndre Hunter wide open last night.
Everybody just sucking into the middle of the lane and then leaving him wide open in the corner or the
I want to challenge every shot. That's the whole mantra of Virginia and Texas Tech's defenses. Challenge every shot. Nothing easy. That was easy. The biggest play of the game was easy because Jerome drove Texas Tech overhelped instead of overcontest. They overhelped. I would rather overcontest than overhelp. So then you overhelp, and then you got a wide-open DeAndre Hunter who hit the shot, but he was wide open. There's no hand in the face. There's no worrying about a guy sliding and hitting my leg or anything like that. So if it were me, I would rather contest the shot, and if there happens to be a whistle, I can deal with that probably more so than, well, I didn't go out and contest it, coach, because I worried about a whistle and leave the guy wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had to choose one or the other, wouldn't you contest a shot?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What's a harder shot? one that's contested or one that's wide open. Typically, it's the one that's contested.
Yeah, and you know that's a situation where you just got to know the situation too.
Right.
Like if you're up by two, then yeah, you suck in and don't let him get to the basket.
Yeah, and he might still kick it out wide open three.
And you have a wide open three, but that 3-pointer is going to be a percentage wise, even though he's open, it's a harder shot than making a layup to tie the game with a 2-pointer.
Right.
But you're up by three, so you give him the two.
Yeah.
Because you're still in the lead if you and they have value.
You'll have possession.
So it's just one of those deals where you just can, like I said, it's just one lapse mentally, defensively.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not always in those situations. And typically, you want to stop the guy driving to the basket.
Yeah. Normally, that's the right play.
Here, you let him have the two because you're still up if he makes it with 12 seconds left.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's something you learn from, obviously. You can't, learn from it this year anymore.
Right.
But, credit Hunter. He still has to make the shot, and he did. And, it's.
And there still was overtime.
But it is one of those deals where it was just doing too much with the drive when you need to protect that line when you're up by three.
Yeah. To me, is a defensive breakdown because you overclose out a little bit, or is it a defensive breakdown when you leave a guy wide open? To me, it's the latter. That's the defensive.
Yeah,
that's a much worse
defensive
breakdown. Yeah. So give credit Virginia. They made 14 out of 14 free throws in overtime, which is insane. I will say this. I didn't have a major dog in the fight. I was cheering for Tech to win. I was. But I was okay with Virginia winning, especially after they went through last year. And there's more coming out about what Virginia went through last year after they were the first one. And remember, they were the overall number one last year in the tournament. And they lost to UMBC, not by one, by 20 points. And Laurel Bennett, which is Tony Bennett's wife, said to CBS Sports that things were so bad after that loss last year it was insane that the team got death threats. Young 18, 19, 20-year-old kids got death threats for losing a basketball game. They had to take a police escort back to the hotel after they lost to UMBC last year. They had to come in through a side door. A policeman went up with each of the guys to their rooms to make sure they all made it to their rooms safely. It was ridiculous, and it made it feel so much worse to them, I think. We lost a game. That's bad enough. Now people are threatening our lives because we lost a game. And it made things tough on the Bennett family and for the Virginia basketball program. But Tony Bennett and his wife Laurel got together and they said, listen, let's turn this loss into something positive. No matter what the next season brings, don't let March 16th, 2018 define Virginia basketball. So good. That's just so good because a lot of people wouldn't have handled it the way the Bennetts did. And that's why I am perfectly fine with Virginia winning the championship and they caught some breaks. And you almost think this is karma. You got a horrible loss, the worst loss in NCAA tournament history without question, was a 16 beating a 1 by 20 last year. And then they come back a year later and win it all. And, my predictions weren't very good all year long, or all tournament long. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got to the Final Four, I told you all of a sudden, I said, I don't know if I believe in destiny, but it just seems like this is the only way it should end, that they win it all. And then, of course, after what happened in the Auburn game, the way they won that game, we're like, come on, man. They have to win.
It started for me
they
won the Purdue game, and it's just oh, man.
Right. And so I still stuck with Virginia winning last night.
Yeah, and I did too. I just felt like it was after what happened in those two games.
Yeah.
It's just like, how do you not pick?
Well, how about the first round game? They're down 14 in the first half against Gardner-Webb at 16, and they could easily been like, oh, God.
Yeah, not again.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
Because it was the exact same thing.
When I was watching it, it's like, oh, goodness.
Yeah.
And then it happened again.
I know. It's crazy.
They turned it around and obviously turned it all the way around.
That was their largest deficit in the tournament, was against a 16 seed in the first round. And then, of course, Purdue, they should have never won. I mean, they caught a couple of huge breaks in the Purdue game. That's a game they should have never won. And Auburn, I thought they were the better team. See, Purdue, I thought, was the better team against Virginia. Against Auburn, I thought Virginia was a better team. It's just Auburn, made a run there in the final 5 minutes. But here's Tony Bennett, the head coach of Virginia. If you can't pull for this guy, all right, then I don't know who you can pull for. Listen to what he has to say about whether the pain of that loss last year, if it's gone, now that he's won his first ever national championship and it's Virginia's first ever men's basketball national championship.
Does it go away completely? No, I wish that went to happen in some ways. Now I say, well, if it bought us a ticket here, so be it. But I'm thankful in a way for what happened because it did. It drew me closer, most importantly, to my faith in the Lord, drew me closer to my wife and children, just because I say you realize what's unconditional in those spots when the world's telling you you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're the worst thing going and all that stuff. You say, okay, what really matters. And it pushed me to that in a way. And then it drove me to, I think as a staff, we became better. We had a look at how can we change if we're in this spot again and we play certain teams and we adjusted some things. That helped. And again, all the lessons from that. So is the pain gone? I mean, I still feel a little, because I remember that feeling, but I think I'm okay. It's about the joy of competition and the fun in the pursuit of a championship, you know, and that I love it. And they, the quote that my wife actually, I just saw, she went to that TED talk, and it you talk about being almost prophetic. What that says, if you learn to use it right, the adversity, it will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. And I don't know if maybe we could have, but I don't know, going through what we did, their own stuff inside and the opinion of others, and just come together and tighten it in a way. And they went after it in terms of developing their own game and then how they played. They were a joy to coach. I mean, they worked. And anything I said, yes, sir, they would just go after it. And we pushed them hard, but we also loved on them too.
I'm happy for Virginia. One of the reasons I was cheering for Tech last night is I think Virginia's more likely to get there again. So that's one of the biggest reasons I was cheering for Tech. And they're from the Big 12 and so forth and so on. I saw a funny tweet. Patrick Mahomes, of course, was in the stands, and then Kelsey shotgunning a beer, if you saw that in the videos last night. Yes. But although I don't know, he might have been faking that too, because he held up there forever. And then
it shouldn't take that long.
Yeah,
to
I think my son said it was staged. I agree. I think it was staged, but it's still funny. But Mahomes, you know, flexing his muscles, which he's got some guns, no question, and he's cheering on Texas Tech. And somebody on Twitter said, "Man, Patrick Mahomes can't catch a break in overtime."
Yeah.
Because he lost in the AFC title game in overtime. And, of course, Texas Tech, his alma mater lost in overtime in the national championship game last night. Chris Beard talks about how proud he is of his team, even though finished runner-up.
In terms of our players, you know, I've never been more proud of a team that I've coached. I think what these guys have accomplished this year, Big 12 championship, Final Four, national championship game, we'll graduate all five seniors here in a couple months. And these guys will go on to be great pros and fathers and husbands, and just never been more proud of a group. A lot of emotion in our locker room right now, and it's real. Just guys that care about the guy next to them. So, but this is life, and, you know, we'll bounce back.
So, the question I posed early on the show that I said we might talk about real quickly is Texas Tech maybe the new ringleader of the Big 12? And the reason I say that is Dedrick Lawson announced yesterday he's going pro. No surprise there. He averaged 19 points, 10 rebounds. He's going pro. He's going to sign with an agent. KJ Lawson is going to be a graduate transfer. He's leaving. He declared that a few days ago. Charlie Moore, KU backup point guard. He's gone into the transfer portal, so he's going to transfer out of Kansas, which is no surprise because he just didn't fit at Kansas. And Kansas every year gets a transfer that you think, oh, that'll be a good pickup, and then it just doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. You got Udoka Azubuike, which I hear he's going to go pro. Silvio De Sousa, you know, why would he come back if he's going to be, unless they get that appeal overturned, there's no way he's going to play next year, why would he come back to Kansas? So I doubt he'll be back unless they can get that, you know, the appeal granted and they say, okay, this year's good enough for the suspension. He can play next year, although he's still part of the program right now. And then Quentin Grimes, I still think he's going to be gone, which some KU fans would say, well, good, he wasn't that great this year anyway. But the point being is that's a lot of talent KU loses. And Brian Haney's been saying over and over, well, if these guys come back, this and this and all the experience, you're going to have Dotson back, you're going to have Garrett back. But, you know, Dotson's a really good player, but you don't have a superstar on that team coming back next year for Kansas.
You better find a guy that can shoot from the outside.
Which they didn't have this year. And so Kansas, of course, no LeGerald Vick, which that happened, you know, later in the year too anyway. But Kansas has got three scholarships available and maybe more. And you got Texas Tech that, yeah, they're going to lose four seniors and Jarrett Culver's going to be gone because I'm sure he'll go to the draft. But, I mean, Texas Tech, and I've said this for a little while, I do believe that Kansas is going to be impacted by this NCAA investigation after the FBI investigation. I don't know if Kansas is going to have to vacate wins, they're going to lose scholarships, or they're going to have to, you know, be put on probation. I'm not saying any of that's going to happen, but I think something's going to happen. And I believe right now, and this is just my opinion, although others I think share this opinion, I think right now it's hurting Kansas in recruiting, and I think it hurt this past year as well. Mm-hmm. Because I think they would have gotten Romeo Langford if they didn't have that problem with the FBI investigation. Mm-hmm. And he chose Indiana. That was a safe pick. I think when it comes down now, Chris Beard can recruit. He's got a national profile because he made it to the national championship game. Players love him. You could tell his personality. The announcers are gushing about his practices and everything else. That if he stays at Tech, which if Shaka Smart doesn't leave Texas or they don't fire him, which it sounds like they won't, because remember Chris Beard started as student manager at Texas. He actually coached at Fort Scott Community College for a year. Did you know that? Chris Beard did? So there's Kansas ties.
Yeah.
But Chris Beard, he is kind of the cat's meow now in coaching for the most part. He's the new guy on campus, even though he's been at Tech now for 3 years. But the point of the story is that now if you go recruiting, Chris Beard is a known commodity. And if he's competing against Bill Self for players, he can say, listen, I just made a national championship game. Kansas didn't. Secondly, I don't have the FBI or the NCAA investigating my program. And so I can assure you we won't be put on probation. And some people can say, well, that's a low blow. That's dirty recruiting. Trust me.
You don't think people are doing that?
Every single coach does it. Trust me.
If you're going up against a team like that, you have to bring that up.
You do bring that up. Absolutely. And it's a fair play because, you know, if Kansas is guilty of it, they brought it on themselves.
Especially with all the advantages Kansas already has recruiting.
Exactly.
It's like you got to do anything you can.
Yeah. So you can say, listen, I can assure you our program isn't being investigated by the FBI or the NCAA. I can assure you that we won't be on probation. You know, you can go to Kansas. Kansas is a great school. You got a great atmosphere and blah, blah, blah. But are you 100% sure that you're going to be playing the NCAA tournament next year, especially if you're a really talented player that wants to be on the national stage, which Kansas does get more primetime exposure. There's no question, especially in the non-con, although Tech will probably get a little bit more after their run this year. There is an opening right now in the Big 12 for somebody to be a dominant in this conference besides Kansas. You know, Kansas State, I don't think Kansas State is that team. I think Texas Tech is that team that can run with this. And it can't hurt recruiting when you make it a national championship game.
No.
Not at all. And beating the teams they beat. And, you know, Gonzaga, Michigan State, I mean, it's pretty impressive. So I think Kansas, you know, I think there's a lot of KU fans that just think it was a bump in the road. Okay, we're going to start a new streak next year. I'd say not so fast. Because I think it's already affecting Kansas on the recruiting trail in regards to getting players. Or, as somebody would joke, well, now they've been caught, or somewhat we think they've been caught. Now they can't pay players because everybody's watching them closely, so now they're not going to get those great players. I'm not saying that's true or not true, but some people believe that as well. So I think there's a big-time opening for Texas Tech or another program in the Big 12 to take this conference and win it more often than not instead of Kansas.
Yeah, I think that obviously KU's always going to have their –
sure.
Their hat in the ring there and have a chance to be up at the top. I don't think that's going to change, but I definitely agree. I don't think this is going to be a bump in the road and then they're going to win like 6-7, even that many championships in a row. I really think that these schools, now that streak's been broken, I think they have a little bit more confidence that it can happen and that you can do it over an 18-game season. And I think that's going to help teams like Texas Tech, teams like, you know,
might even help Texas.
Texas, maybe Iowa State.
Yeah, they're getting learn how to play defense.
They can ever figure things out and maybe get, you know, maybe not lose that game that they shouldn't. That just derails their whole chance in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think the teams have a lot of confidence. And listen, Chris Beard was already a great recruiter.
Oh yeah, he's
already a good coach. And when you add this to the profile, I mean, you're way ahead of everybody else other than Kansas in the Big 12 right now.
Right.
Because of everything else that Kansas brings to the table historically.
I mean, Kansas loses Deidre Glosson. KJ Lesson was a bench player. Charlie Moore's a bench player. If Udoka goes pro, which I know you didn't have him for most of the season anyway, but that's a major blow. You lose your four and your five. You lose Grimes, who people can say he wasn't great this year, but you got to replace him with somebody. Mm-hmm. And DeSosa, of course, didn't play this year. Some people say no big deal, and Charlie Moore, no big deal. But you look at who they got back. Lightfoot, McCormick, who I think could turn into a really good player.
Yeah.
Garrett, Dotson, who am I leaving out?
Ochai,
yeah. He could be a star.
Yeah.
I mean, there's talent there, but it's going to be really, really hard for Kansas, I think, to win the Big 12 next year. I'm not saying they can't, obviously. I think it's going to be as wide open next year as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what Texas Tech does in recruiting and everything else, I think you finally have a bona fide contender, I think, year in and year out now for Kansas. And we've committed talking about how the Big 12 isn't all that if you can never have a real big-time contender to Kansas, and we've never really seen that. Nobody consistently has done that. Frank Martin a year or two, maybe. Kevin Durant, Rick Barnes a year, yes. But Oklahoma, there was a year where they've done it. You can share a title with Kansas. But can you actually, you know, 3 or 4 years in a row, can you be right there at the top with Kansas? Nobody's done that.
No.
Since Bill Self's been there. I think Texas Tech obviously can do that. They were right there in their top last year. Point guard doesn't get hurt. They probably win the Big 12 last year. Mm-hmm. And then this year, they make it to the national championship game and win the Big 12.
Tech trying to start a streak.
You could be.
Keenan Evans didn't go
down.
You're
absolutely right. That could be two in a row for Texas Tech, and they'd be looking for three in a row. That's a good point. Instant replay, we need more or less of it. Last night, there was, listen, the play I didn't like, but you know what? People are trying to make up their own rules on social media. Instant replay is designed to get the call right and to, slow-mo and pause and stop and try to make sure the call is right. And there are people that were, of course, Texas Tech fans complaining about the play where David Moretti was in the open court going after a loose ball, had it in his hand, it was poked away by DeAndre Hunter. It was in overtime. It was under 2 minutes. They could review it. And when you review it, slow it down, you can tell the ball went off the pinky or two fingers off of David Moretti. That appeared to be the right call. It was last touch by Moretti. Now, any other time during the game, that call with the naked eye by the officials is more, that's off the defender, and it's not, the play is not overturned. I hear people say, well, that's breaking the spirit of the rule. Whose spirit? Who
that's
made,
what I want to know. Like, who establishes what the spirit of the rule is?
Because your spirit says...
I hear
says,
that so much. It's not the spirit of the rule. It's not the spirit of the rule that Terrence scores out when he pops up off
right.
the bag in the ALDS.
Right. But he came off the bag, and it's a live play.
He's out.
Right, yeah. Is it within the spirit of... I could argue, is it the spirit of the rule to call a tic-tac-y three-point foul at the end of a Final Four game?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody can have their own opinion. I'm not saying anybody's wrong or right, but what the heck does that mean? It's not within the spirit of the rule. You didn't make the rule.
The rule is who touched it last.
Yeah, the idea is to get it right. So they got it right, but I do understand the argument. Well, you know, any other time during the game, that would have been Texas Tech ball. I get it. I do, and I don't like it either. But based on the rules, you can replay it, review it, slow it down. That's the right call. They got the call right again in regards to who the ball went off of. And so then the question is, and I've always argued this, and I don't want to see more replay because it already slows the game down. It breaks the flow of the game and so forth and so on. I know our webmaster, Derek Nestor, wasn't very happy with the officiating going to the replay. And I agree with Derek to an extent on a lot of that is, I don't like it when the game's going up and down and exciting, and all of a sudden we have a five-minute stoppage to rewind and rewind and rewind. I'm like, if you can't figure it out in 60 seconds, I've said this in any sport, if you can't figure it out in 60 seconds, then obviously it's not conclusive enough. And you just say, 60 seconds is up. Are you sure? No, I'm not. Okay, we stick with the call on the floor. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this whole, we can't review anything until under 2 minutes. Like, everything's more important inside 2 minutes. That's just what we've been led to believe in sports. Well, the official should swallow their whistle in the final 2 minutes. Why? Who made up that rule?
Yeah.
Well, replay is a rule. They say they can only review it under 2 minutes. But I've always said, why? Well, because that would make the games longer if you reviewed everything. But aren't you supposed to try to get it right? You can't tell me. Sometimes a game can be decided in the first half when a guy's out there playing with two fouls and he gets called for a charge when the guy's in a restricted area, could be a block or whatever it may be, and that changes the whole impact of the game, doesn't it? Or what if you go back and guy calls a guy out of bounds taking a three-point shot, the official says he stepped out, when replay shows he never stepped out, and it wipes away 3 points? You don't think that's important to the game?
No, I mean,
of course it is.
You could be down by three, make a three, and then they say you're out. Well, they erase that, and then they go down and make a three.
That's a 6-0 run.
Swing. I mean, that's changing the entire game, whether you like it or not.
That can happen.
At that point of the game,
that can
changed it.
That can happen in the first 2 minutes of the game, the last 2 minutes of the half, or the last 2 minutes of the game. And so I think I've said all along, this whole instant replay has opened up the Pandora's box because now you're seeing the NFL. Well, now we want to be able to challenge plays that aren't even called that are fouls, like the Saints-Rams game, which I think is a Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the thinking behind it. I don't mind that you have a challenge or two to challenge it, but how do you – I don't know, man. I could see you made a call and you can have proof that it wasn't a foul and overturn it, but to actually, 10 minutes later, okay, we're throwing the flag. There was pass interference after a long review. It's just slowed the game down even more.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm all about getting it right, but we're only worried about getting it right 2 out of 40 minutes of a game. So there's the Pandora's box and the dilemma. Do you review every single thing throughout the game? Do you allow basketball coaches to have challenge flags? So you go and challenge a few things no matter what time of the game it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have 3 challenges per half. And if Tony Bennett ran out of 3 challenges, he couldn't have challenged that DeAndre Hunter Moretti play in the overtime. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We would know, both coaches out of reviews and challenges, so we don't have to worry about replay the rest of the game in overtime. Yeah. Now, would we still miss a call and it wasn't reviewed?
Sure. They'd probably still do it the way the NFL does it, where inside 2 minutes, it's a booth review.
Yeah.
It's an official review.
Right.
They'd probably still do it that way, even if they allowed challenges.
They might.
That's what every other level does.
But why shouldn't you be allowed? Well, that's what I'm saying now. Why couldn't you have a challenge or two for each coach before 2 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm telling you, there's big calls made earlier in games that can determine games.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, it's just, if you want to get it right, you have to review everything. And if you, I think it's a mixed message. So the question comes back, do we need more replay? From that viewpoint, we do, because every minute, every call is important, right? Mm-hmm. Or do we need less of it because it already slows the game down way too much? And I could argue either way, quite honestly. I'm okay with less of it, and I'd be okay with having challenge flags by a basketball coach to say, hey, you missed that one. And that would make the game a little bit longer.
Yeah. I was like, I'm trying to think of like how often you would have to review a tip ball in the course of a 40-minute game.
Yeah.
And you know, there's not a lot of times when I'm watching that it's – not clearly off of one person.
Right.
So you could get in there real quick and see them. And most coaches probably wouldn't challenge them if they understand that it's that's clearly off of us.
One of the problems with having challenges in basketball is the game's so much faster.
Yeah, exactly.
That you don't have time to you'll challenge it. And
you
can
can't
be horrible,
like Ned Yost in baseball, say, hold on.
Right.
Let me look at something.
Right, because you got to make a split second decision. Do I challenge it? And it might be a horrible challenge, but you don't have time to review it. Because, boom, they're throwing the ball in.
Yeah.
So that's one of the problems with challenges.
Oh, yeah, without question.
But it would make it interesting because if you feel super confident right away, your gut, that's a bad call. Okay, if you wasted your challenge, you wasted your challenge. Or you say, I want to save that for, you know, from the 3-minute mark to the 2-minute mark at the end of the game, and then you don't challenge something you should have. I think it adds more strategy to it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think on the tip ball thing is an easier thing to implement through a 40-minute game than some of the other things you might challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go back.
I would love to see goaltending challenge. When guys have basket interference, the refs miss that a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, you can go back 5 minutes later and change a 3-2 or a 2-3.
They allow that.
But, you know, this is a whole different thing because you can't go back. Once you've gone 5 minutes, there's probably been maybe 5 to 10 points scored either way.
Well, think about Auburn, Virginia.
So you can't just be like, oh, we're going to give you the ball now because we messed up earlier.
Well, think about Auburn, Virginia. You allowed a shot. You called a foul after there was a double dribble. So now you're going to go back and cancel the foul and put time on the clock and say it was a double dribble. Or you go back and say, oh, we saw a foul before the double dribble.
Yeah. You have problems,
it's too
I think, on challenges in basketball.
I agree.
Is that, hey, he double dribbled. I want to challenge that.
Well, you'd have to.
Are we supposed to ignore the foul that happened before the double dribble now that we've had a chance to look back at it and realize, oh, that was a foul before the double dribble even happened? We should have called a foul there.
Which so they would probably make the rule. They'd say it's not, we can't review a foul.
Yeah, exactly. And it would be like you can't review anything else other than what's being reviewed is what they would say.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than the challenge, you can't review anything else.
You have to have a limit on it. But then the question is, for every single person in America watching sports, where's that limit? Where's that line? And for everybody, it's a different line, you know? The Royals, we're going through as the number one overall pick in the draft next year. Royals lose again, 13-5. Gave up 8 runs in the 6th inning and gave up 2 home runs to one guy in the same inning. It's pretty awesome. Royals lose 13-5. Royals, I believe they're back in action today.
Yeah, 7:15.
Okay. Good, no off day. Royals in Seattle again. Or would it be good if they had an off day? Not good. They've lost 7 in a row. They're 2-7. They had a horrible start last year at 3-14, and they're about that way now. 2-7 after starting 2-0. They have a 7-game losing streak. Anything to add before we bring on Mr. Riley Gates?
If you're interested in local sports, ncksports.com. There's some baseball, softball, track and field today. All those schedules are right there for you.